You are listening to local and regional news produced by KMUN with help from our news partners. I'm Skylar Butenchin. It's Friday, July 18th. Oregon Governor Tina Kotek now has the authority to hire and fire the next state forester. OPB's April Ehrlich reports.
The state forester oversees logging on state land and wildland firefighting across 16 million acres of public and private land. The Board of Forestry has long had the power to hire and fire the state forester, but this year, lawmakers passed a bill transferring that authority to the governor. Kotek staff met with the board this week. Some board members, including Vice Chair Brendan McComb, wondered what authority they have left.
Right now, after the passage of this Senate bill, I have very little reason to trust your office.
Kotek staff said the Board of Forestry still maintains its authority to create forest policies. Along with Kotek staff, some board members and other agency leaders will interview candidates through September. Kotek will then choose a final candidate who will be officially nominated in mid-November. I'm April Ehrlich reporting.
Artificial intelligence is squeezing into even the most remote corners of Washington state, and that's changing the kinds of jobs you find in rural communities. Reporter Joshua McNichols recently visited a lumber mill to learn more.
Morton is a sleepy logging town near Mount Rainier. But inside the Hampton Lumber Mill, it's a blur of activity. Thousands of wood studs fly by on a conveyor belt. They pass through a futuristic-looking machine. Its belly is full of bright light and cameras.
So like AI does, it's got to learn, right? So the more it sees, the more it learns, the better it does.
Aaron Poquette manages this mill. He points to a worker hunched over a laptop. He's training an AI system to assess the quality of each 2x4.
We used to have a force of people sitting in online, grading lumber manually, looking at every single board, making a decision.
Very labor intensive. Lumber mill jobs are changing. There's still physical labor, sweeping up sawdust, pulling out scraps of wood, but increasingly, these jobs are about managing robots.
This is all newer equipment, a lot of it's robotic, right? Very, very, very precise and very repetitive.
What's driving this transformation is competition from highly automated sawmills. Austin Himes teaches forestry at Washington State University. He calls these new higher tech mills super mills.
These mills can handle, you know, orders of magnitude greater volume and require relatively fewer people to operate.
The Hampton Mill is doing fine, according to its owner. But small mills like this are closing every year. As a smaller mill, the Hampton Mill does have disadvantages. But as long as it continues to thrive, it'll keep training its employees on new technology. That means rising salaries for people in small towns like Morton, Washington. I'm Joshua McNichols reporting.
President Trump's plan to increase logging in federal forests could run into a roadblock. More harvested trees could create more lumber mill jobs, but there may not be room for workers, because in small towns around lumber mills, there is a housing shortage. We go back to Joshua McNichols for this report.
Housing used to be cheaper in logging towns, but then came the pandemic and people from cities started buying up homes in rural areas. It's a common problem in Morton, Washington, near Mount Rainier. Aaron Poquette runs the Hampton Lumber Mill there.
You know, we get a lot of our new hires. The first thing they ask is, where do I go to rent a place? People want to live here. A lot of times it's just not in the cards right now for us.
Generally, state legislators have shied away from encouraging housing in remote areas. That's because development can stretch local water resources and infrastructure. I'm Joshua McNichols reporting.
In the Pacific Northwest, fish hatcheries represent a guarantee that salmon populations will continue to be strengthened to help make up for the toll taken by dams and industrialization. For commercial and recreational fishers, especially indigenous nations with treaty-protected fishing rights, this guarantee from the U.S. government and Western states is crucial for mitigating the loss of fish production. But today, the promise of sustained fish yields is in danger of collapsing. Sean Clements is deputy director at the Oregon Department of Fish and Wildlife. He says there is a convergence of crises impacting hatcheries' ability to operate: deferred maintenance costs, rising inflation, and climate change. And while those challenges have been building for decades, Clement says the recent federal spending cuts and layoffs under the Trump administration have exacerbated the problem. For some hatcheries, the strain could be too much to keep operating. Zach Penny is the Director of Strategic Initiatives for the Columbia River Intertribal Fish Commission. He says in the absence of bigger ecosystem fixes, hatcheries are a necessary failsafe for fisheries. While some conservation groups say over-reliance on hatcheries hurts wild fish stocks, Penny says that for better or worse, hatcheries are the tool the federal and state governments have chosen to keep Pacific Northwest fisheries afloat. And he says that if the uncertainty around resources for hatcheries continue, fisheries will have to make hard choices about what fish they can continue to raise. This story comes to us through a news partnership with the Chinook Observer, online at chinookobserver.com. Following COVID, the federal government set aside funds to expand Medicaid services. As Jefferson Public Radio's Emma J. Nelson reports, Oregon used some of that money to help people enrolled in the low-income healthcare program prepare for natural disasters.
The Oregon Office of Aging and People with Disabilities Services has purchased thousands of emergency kits and hundreds of power stations for some Medicaid recipients. J.D. Tilford manages the office's Medicaid support. He says people receiving in-home Medicaid services should request a kit as soon as possible.
So this is first-come, first-served basis. The quantity we have, once they're out, unfortunately at this time we don't have the funds to buy more.
While Tilford says the office has enough emergency kits for all eligible recipients, the stockpile will not be replenished. The agency has already handed out 5,000 kits containing food, water, and other supplies. I'm Emma J. Nelson reporting.
Tomorrow afternoon, KMUN will be hosting a block party for all ages. We will be closing the street down between the Tillicum House and Fort George Brewery on Exchange Street between 14th and 15th Streets in downtown Astoria. The festivities start at noon. There will be a raffle and prizes, live music, local nonprofits, food and drink, lawn games, and more. Again, this is a free community event for all ages from noon until 4 p.m. tomorrow. You're listening to news from KMUN. To hear us on the air and catch national news from NPR, tune in to 91.9 FM. Morning news begins at 7:59 every weekday. And of course, you will always be able to find today's local and regional news here at KMUN.org. To contact the KMUN News Department, email us at news1@kmun.org. That's news, the numeral 1, at kmun.org.